by
Okay.
saying Happy New Year to our Clinical Services Affinity Group. It's so good to see you all. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Lisa Smith, the Chief Program Officer here at the network. And I am thrilled that I'm able to work with this clinical affinity group with Elaine, Dr. Elaine Rotenberg. She is the chair of this group, and she really takes a lot of time and energy to make sure that this meets all of your needs. So if you have any questions or issues or things you want to talk about, you just have to let Elaine know, and
Yeah.
we'll make sure that this meets your needs. So with
Great.
that being said, Elaine, you can take it away. Everyone,
Yeah, thanks,
yeah,
Lisa.
great.
Thank you. It's so good to see everybody. Happy New Year. Let's take our big clinical collective breath because apparently we're in a brand new year now. So we were going to discuss, like, at some point, Ruben, how this year is just so different already than last year, but not quite sure about that yet. So anyhow, I'm really happy to see all of you guys. And like Lisa said, it has just been, continues to be such a pleasure working with everybody, because I think what you're sharing with each other and how we continue to sort of move forward in terms of your needs and our needs and how we answer whatever comes up, we're really appreciating your feedback and help with each other. So before we kind of do what we were going to talk about today, also, we are very excited and I'm thrilled to introduce our CEO of the network, Ruben Rotman, who's got sort of a guest with us today and a special presentation. So I am happy to have you here, Ruben. It's all
Thank
yours.
you, Elaine. Thank you for letting me crash your meeting. I wanted to
Anytime.
spend a few minutes talking with you about a dynamic that I'm sure many of you have already been seeing in your communities. And it's something that has now gotten attention not only within our network, but certainly in the broader world. And there have been surveys and studies done. There is significant concern about the mental health and wellness of children, youth, teens, and young adults, talking about ages as low as 2 and all the way up to 22 or 25 even. And there have been efforts to try to figure out the level of disruption that COVID has brought about to understand the true impact. It's all about the Zoom school. It's all about lost summers that didn't really happen. It's all about confusion around college and that whole dynamic and what's going on there. And it's also about capacity. When people are in need, they reach out for community resources within our network and beyond our network, and they're struggling with finding specialized, specific mental health services that focus and target children, adolescents, and young adults. Telemental health has made some of that easier, but not fully. And so this issue has come to the forefront, and there are philanthropists and government now paying attention. And we'd like our network to be part of that dynamic, and we'd also like our network to be playing a role in identifying gaps in the Jewish community in particular. And so we have been fortunate at the national level to be able to initiate some discussions with other organizations that operate in the Jewish community, supporting those populations, like the Foundation for Jewish Camp that supports overnight and day camps, and Prisma that supports Jewish day schools, and the JCC Association that supports Jewish community centers, and the Federation system that does a lot of work with young adults through engagement and Hillel and et cetera. And together with some funding, we are going to do a very short-term, very focused study in two sides. First, we want to understand the clinical capacity of the agencies in our network. We want to get a better handle on who's doing what and what they've learned and how they do what they do. We know that there are some communities that, because of funding they've been able to secure, they've started very specific, narrow-focused programs serving these populations. We need to know what that is, what it looks like, and what they do and what they don't do. And then we're also going to be looking outside of our network at other resources in the broader community. But along the way, there's a fervor and a pace, because the waiting lists are quite high. There's a fervor to really build a capacity among those who are gatekeepers, who have access to children, teens, and young adults, so that they're better trained on recognizing mental health concerns and being able to make referrals where appropriate. And so funding has been received to, between now and June, train up to 1,000 key gatekeepers in the Jewish community, primarily in those education and engagement spaces, with the curriculum Youth Mental Health First Aid. And we need to know who within our network has been trained as a facilitator with that curriculum, who might be available to be part of it. Because we have partners involved, there's added components to edit and inform and influence the curriculum to include Jewish context and Jewish characters and Jewish values. But we're looking to really get that done very quickly. And so we're partnering with an entity that has access to those institutions that employ the staff that do that gatekeeping work with JCCs and camps and schools. But they need facilitators, you know, to actually do the training, which is remote. So to put all this together, to figure out who we are and what we do and what we don't do, and to also figure out who we are and what we don't do outside of our network, we have the good fortune of being able to engage the consulting support and services from Tricia Stern. Tricia is a clinical social worker who has done quite a bit of work in this space, both in the Jewish community and beyond the Jewish community. And she's going to be working with our network for the next several months to do this study, which is going to take the form of a survey that Tricia will talk about, and also to help get those in our network that are in this space out as trainers and figure out how we could build capacity and identify what our needs are so that we could bring more resources to serve these populations and our agencies. So that's the big picture of what we're doing. I'm gonna let Tricia introduce herself, talk about the survey, phase one, a bit about phase two and where this is all going. And then we'll take questions. If you have.
Thank you, Ruben. And thank you all for letting me pop in here today. It's good to see you all and some very familiar faces. So as Ruben said, as we work with and train Jewish education and engagement professionals about mental health needs for youth, there's going to obviously be a need of where do we refer, where can we get the youth we're identifying services and support. So we've created a survey. It's going to launch next week to agencies in the network to better understand what services are being provided. And we've broken it into three groups, children and adolescents, we group that into one, young adults, and parenting services. And we want to know the types of services you're providing, if you have a framework for the services you're providing, meaning individual, group, family, whatever it is. Also, we'd like to know how many clinicians you have who are able to provide these services, if they've had training for working with these specific populations. We're going to ask about referrals sources. Where do you tend to get most of your referrals from? We also want to hear, Ruben mentioned it, the experience with teletherapy and within each group of population, because I think it's different for each group, how it's going. And also, Ruben mentioned the waiting list. We want to know about what waiting lists are looking like. just to say, there's no right answer. Like, this is not a test. This isn't, you know, like, oh my gosh, we're not doing this. We're not expecting to see anything. We're really just trying to get an understanding of the landscape. So when we have people trained and want to help families or kids and families get to services, we know where we can help them do that. Now, if your agency isn't providing services to one or more, or maybe you're not providing to any of these populations, please do still fill out the survey, because there is a question about needs, about if you're not providing it, do you think there's a need for it? And we'd like to know why you think there is. And if you don't think there's a need, that's really helpful too. Because then you might tell us there's another agency that does this, so we can know about that. Or just that might not be what you're seeing where you are, and that's good for us to know as well. I tried to make it as easy as possible to fill out, but it will have my information on there, my email, and you can feel free to reach out to me if anything is confusing. And I probably will be reaching out to you if you are completing it about services, just so I can get a better sense of what that is looking like. Any questions or thoughts about that part, the survey?
And this is really about us getting an understanding of what our landscape is right now in the network, and figuring out where the gaps are and figuring out ultimately what resources we can bring to help shore up those gaps.
How long will the survey take to fill out, do you think?
I've done it now many times. It shouldn't take more than a couple minutes. I mean, if it's
perfect. That doesn't seem.
It depends how much. If you're writing a paragraph, you know, or a big summary of what you're doing, that will take longer. I tried to make most clicking a button, but some we do ask. You know, tell us about teletherapy. That's a more open-ended. Tell us about training, tell us about the framework for your services. That is more open-ended.
Did I miss this? Is it only for US agencies?
No, it's for any agency in our network, US, Canada, or Israel. But our sense is we're going to get responses from US and Canada.
Okay. So part one is the survey to get the landscape of what current child services are being provided.
Yeah, and within that, we're going to be asking questions about, you know, if you do have staff that have been trained as youth mental health first aid.
I wanted to ask about that part of it.
Yeah, we'd like to know that.
Yes.
If you don't, but you're interested in being trained, we'd like to know that also. So that's embedded within this survey.
Right.
And again, it's child, adolescent, young adults, because as Ruben said, I'm sure you've heard research that that group is also being particularly impacted by the pandemic. And then parenting services.
Right. Question. Ruben, is part of the big picture then for the network to be offering the youth mental health first aid training to these gatekeepers?
Along with others who are not part of our network, yes. Yes. Meaning there are some private practice, individuals and others who are trained in the field who want to be available to the Jewish community to do this. Mm-hmm. It's all going to be done online. It's a lot of trainings between now and June. Right. You know, we're looking to do up to 1,000 people quickly. Okay. So,
Awesome. I'm just asking, will people who are existing youth mental health first aid trained virtually who are doing that who are in the network, be able and offer the opportunity to do some of the teaching?
Yes. Yes.
And that will be on this survey.
Yes. Yes.
Awesome.
Maybe you're interested in
the survey. Awesome. Ends with questions saying, are you or anyone your agency trained in the youth mental health first aid training? And then it's if no, would you like to be?
That's awesome.
Because we're going to need a lot of people to train.
It's a really wonderful opportunity. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing that with us. Mm-hmm. Right? If there are no other questions, I guess what, Ruben?
Yeah, no, the only other thing I'm going to say is that when we're done collecting the data, we're going to put a report together that's going to tell the whole network what's the state of the field. Where are we with all of this?
So we need you.
Where are our gaps? What are we doing? And so stay tuned because Tricia will be developing that to share with all of us because it's, you know, we have to build capacity. That's what this is all about. And we're going to learn a lot through the survey and through some interviews that Tricia's going to do. And then we're going to figure out how to fill in the gaps for what,
that's awesome,
you know, where we need to go. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for coming.
Yep.
Bye. Thanks, Tricia. Thanks, Ruben.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay.
Elaine, one thing before we start, was it difficult to get onto this call today? Because you guys got a new system, the Neon. Right? You registered and you're in. Okay. Terrific. A lot of people couldn't find the link. So I wasn't sure if it was confusing or not, but it seems like you all are here. So maybe you're not the ones I should be talking to.
Okay. Exactly. It's the people that
what was different is maybe with the missing link is like in my email, often there's a link to click and it just brings you into the meeting. And I didn't have that. I had to just copy the address and paste it. So anybody who's newer to Zoom might have been confused.
Yeah. And I think we are writing now in the future that you have to copy and paste it in the email, right? Because we didn't realize that originally, but I'm glad you guys are here and it'll be easier next time because you'll know. That's it. Sorry, Elaine. Now let's get back.
No problem. Okay, so I think Happy New Year. This is our first clinical meeting since you're all on mute. You don't have to be on mute or a small group. This is a, we like to have a free-for-all in our clinical meetings, Lisa, right? So this is our first meeting of the new year. And I think one of the things that we were going to talk about and leave room for was kind of the transition from where we are in terms of transition from 2020 to 2021, some of the issues related to vaccine, no vaccine that people are seeing, did things look differently in terms of our virtual landscape, to kind of open it up and wondered if any of you brought anything in particular related to that or different that you wanted to talk about particularly today with your colleagues.
We are here.
They are all muted. You are all still muted, which except
Rachel's ready to say something. Come on, Rachel.
Peggy's ready to say something. She's unmuted. And she's in LA and it is rough in LA. It is rough in LA. I mean, and I've been thinking about that. You know, my kids live out there and my son just had a couple people in his congregation, young parents, die of COVID. Just it's rough out there. So
yeah, I have to say 2021 doesn't feel any different. And if anything, there's real chaos with vaccinations in terms of it being available to older adults now and others, but there is no, the system is not yet in place. Although I know a number of people who have been able to get vaccinated, but I'm sure that everyone is also experiencing the fact that our clients, our older adult clients, and we serve a lot of older adults, are wanting help to register and to get vaccinated. And that is now a huge issue because frankly, it's not within our power either. But managing anxiety, managing people's, you know, no longer being able to sustain this isolation. And so on the mental health side, we're seeing it certainly, and on the practical side. On the other hand, I have to say in terms of service delivery, we're able to serve more people. And clinicians are ever more saying that they really do not want to go back to business as usual. The driving here, the parking, all of those complex issues that stand in our way of being efficient, people have accustomed to this and acclimated, and there is a certain comfort in that on the clinical side. So like everyone else, I'm sure the balance of what's working and this sense of endless suffering, frankly, is where the action is for mental health.
I think that's so, I love other people's reactions to that. I think that's so well stated. Just that balance between the real suffering and real chaos is so, like, it's like Dayenu, like it would be enough if we were just dealing with a pandemic, but to deal with the pandemic and the chaos around and about this vaccine.
What you always say, Elaine, is that it's not just with the clients, right? We're part of it, right? We're all part of it as well.
Yeah. Correct, which I know I've got a lot of thoughts about it, but I'd love to hear everybody else kind of just talk about where this puts you guys as your agencies and your teams and yourselves. Anybody speak up, unmute thyselves. Howard.
Oh, I'll go.
Rachel.
In Charlotte, you know, in North Carolina in general, the vaccine process is at its infancy. So I don't think we have any plans of anything normal. I don't know, for the entire year, I'm thinking at this point, I have no idea. So I don't know even what that's gonna look like, because you know, my clinicians are all really young. So they're gonna be the very last to be vaccinated. So there's gonna be some kind of math that has to happen of like, when clients are vaccinated and clinicians are vaccinated. And I've just decided I'm not gonna think about it right now, because we're nowhere close. So the answer is we're nowhere close. It's business as usual until a lot more happens in that area. We haven't even gotten to, I don't know that even 65 and older are regularly being able to make appointments at this point here. So vaccines are not changing anything as far as now. And I am sort of just, you know, wait and see. What I've noticed this year though, I know not everyone here is in the US, so I apologize, but the incident at the Capitol and the insurrection at the Capitol had a tremendous effect on my staff morale and on our clients. And those two things are very, very linked right now. So, you know, my clinicians are, all of us are living through what our clients are living through. So I actually, you know, that, and I don't know how things will change now that we have a new president and vice president, but that 2 weeks ago really caused a lot of chaos for us. It came up in most of our sessions, in my supervision, individual and group supervision. So that's actually been sort of more of what 2021 has been about for me than anything vaccine related. And again, we'll see. I don't know what will happen, but that's kind of what so far has been in my mind.
How about other folks? Howard, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, two things. Hello, everybody. Howard from Baltimore, Jewish Community Services. Hi. First time.
I know. I didn't think we've seen you before.
Nah.
I've seen how.
Some of us have seen.
Welcome.
So, my two cents. So the agency in Baltimore has agency-wide managers engaging staff on whenever it is that we are morphing to a next metamorphosis, what do we want to hold on to? What do we want to let go of from either COVID time or what we used to do in the past? So proactively, like, what are the lessons learned? How to run an agency? Who really needs an office? Who does better virtually, et cetera, et cetera? And that will probably be implemented months and months down the road. Point two, semi-clinical. We've been running workshops on Zoom for the community on just resiliency, mind body stuff, not therapy, but therapeutic stuff for the walking wounded of us. And if this was a year and a month ago and we offered it in person, one, two people would come. So I did one 2 hours ago. There were 20 people who showed. We've had as many as 75 register and 40 some come. So there seems to be a need, opportunity to maximize. And it's a combination, a little bit of group, depending on the size, but a lot of mind body experiential, as well as what's on your mind kind of stuff. I would encourage all the different communities to.
I totally agree, Howard. I put together a coping series. Actually, that's what I submitted for the conference, but for exactly that kind of thing, to help our communities in a proactive way, figure out how to find their own resilience, how to cope, to give them a frame for their new reality. And I agree with you. I have never seen these kinds of numbers. We've taught this, like, I think almost 40 times now, 40 different groups in the community, and we've had over 2,000 people. And it's just like the numbers of, and we just did one this week.
Are you charging?
No, we're not charging.
Are you charging, Howard?
Howard froze.
Oh, okay.
Howard. Yeah, no, we're not charging. Lisa would never get that attendance if we were charging. I mean, it just wouldn't.
But at least you're getting your word, your name out there.
For sure. It's been the most amazing kind of outreach opportunity for the agency too. But I think it's a way to offer a service for your community, mm-hmm. for sure. So very interesting. We lost him.
He's coming back.
I know. Where's everybody else at with this? How things are going. Some people are not affected by the vaccine issue.
People in Miami, right?
Yeah.
What's happening down there?
So in Florida, I would say that it's pretty much of a mess, and every county is left to themselves to decide how they're going to distribute the vaccine. And it's kind of like a feeding frenzy, because you'll get a text from the emergency operations center, and you immediately go online to Eventbrite. You try to get an appointment. They're all gone within seconds. It's just impossible, even for people who are within the range of, you know, being the age range or whatever, they meet the criteria to be able to get the vaccine. It's really hard. A lot of people go to other counties. I mean, some people I know have gotten it, but there's more stories of frustration. Within our agency, we have a collaboration with our federation and Mount Sinai Hospital to get the vaccine for the survivors. So that program is underway, and they're going to be able to have transportation to get to the hospital to get the vaccine. So at least that portion of our population is being tended to in that way. But as far as the clinicians and the rest of the clients and the rest of the staff, it's just a feeding frenzy. Yeah, so there's a certain degree of frustration. And I know that in our HR department, they're kind of working on, you know, what needs to be. Are they going to require staff to have a vaccine? Or are they not going to require that? Like, what, you know, what is going to be the decision? So I really don't know, you know, where we are with that as an agency, but it's kind of impossible right now.
It is. There was the Publix grocery store got for Florida and Georgia, and I forget the other state, maybe Alabama.
Yeah, I think it's Alabama.
Yeah, they just became the provider for the vaccine, and for over 65 and a healthcare worker. So some folks that, like, if you're a licensed professional, we know some licensed professionals, like licensed social workers, psychologists, whatever, are using their license, and, you know, they're saying that they're frontline workers. However, so they all went on the public site, which opened up at 6 a.m. the other morning. By 7 o'clock, every single slot was filled.
Usually it doesn't even take that long. I guess five minutes, it's gone. They're gone.
I guess there were 250,000 people that tried to get on for 25,000 vaccines. So it's pretty much a nightmare down here. I'm curious about what Barbara just said about the mandatory thing. Are your agencies going to be mandating vaccines?
I don't think anyone knows yet.
That's a discussion I'm starting to hear a little bit of questioning about.
So I'm going to answer I'm from Toronto. So a little bit different in terms of a Canadian approach to vaccines, and we don't have any at the moment. So it's not like anybody's being vaccinated right now. So, but the understanding that we have with regard to staff is that under our Charter of Rights and Freedoms, you cannot mandate someone from a professional employment situation to get vaccinated. That being said, we imagine that most people will when the vaccine becomes available, but that's not even something that we can't mandate it. I'm not sure if there's different legalities in the states or in each state in specifically, but that's something that we're dealing with. We also are looking now toward, how to consider returning to the office or not, what's required, what's needed from our clientele, from our staff, who can work from home. Now that we know that this is sort of a possibility, can we be more flexible in terms of our workspace and our staff and our, sort of requirement historically to have people sort of be at the office 9 to 5.
Yeah. It's a great opportunity, like Howard said, to really, look and see and figure it out, moving forward. I think that most agencies will be hybrid moving forward 100%. But I was going to say about the, what I've heard, because I was on the HR affinity group call, Human Resources Professionals, and they were saying that, you really can't mandate it, because let's say I mandate it and Lauren does it and you have some sort of terrible reaction. And, right. Who's liable? Is the agency liable because I made Lauren get it? So I think that it's really complicated, because you want everyone to have it because it's better for the clients, it's better for your staff, but I don't know if you can mandate it. So there's a lot of legal issues happening that people are really thinking about now.
So pre-COVID, just as an example, how some agencies have handled the flu shot in New York State, same thing, you can't mandate your employees get the flu shot. So the regulation was, if you didn't get your flu shot, you have to wear a mask at all times, like when you're around other employees, when you're around clients. That's how they handled it.
That's interesting.
There are some businesses.
Then everybody's going to get it.
Right, exactly.
That's a great way. No one's even said that. Okay, I'm sorry, Rachel.
Yeah. Oh, no, I stepped away for a second, so I don't know if this was discussed, but I have heard of some retail businesses that are incentivizing getting the vaccine for their employees, such as giving 4 hours paid if they show proof of getting the vaccine and this kind of thing.
Interesting. Bribe.
Hi, Morgan in Delaware. I just wanted to share that we did offer the vaccine. So through Division of Substance Abuse and Mental Health, DSAM, they allowed for all of us to get the vaccine this past Saturday, which we're so fortunate for that. And I hate sharing that to a group of people that are waiting and waiting and waiting for it. So I'm really sorry. But we did incentivize it. We can't force our employees to get the vaccine, just like Toronto was saying. But we did incentivize it by allowing them to receive, not PTO, but we were paying them to go do that for hours. And so that was our way of getting the shot. Not everybody did it, but a lot of people did.
Interesting. So those that didn't, are they going to have to wear a mask? I mean, what tariffs? Said that, but you are too. I guess everyone still has to wear a mask, right?
Yeah, we don't have a plan to stop wearing masks anytime soon. I mean, hopefully we can get there at some point, but for now, we're all just going to be as safe as we possibly can.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Ada, and I'm from Jewish Family Service Houston, and this is my first meeting.
Welcome, Ada.
Hi. Thank you. And similar, like Morgan, we're actually pretty lucky that we got invited to get the vaccine very early on. So actually by the end of February, all our clinicians would already be done with the second shot. And we have a smaller team too. So we have about like 8 clinicians and everyone is very open to the vaccine. Nobody is having any question. And but then the problem still stays there. The fact that it's going to be a hybrid model and we still do not have a clear plan how we want to launch it. Like the concerns that I'm hearing from the clinicians is even though they got the vaccine, but because of the pandemic, many of them are actually taking care of their elder parents that they might be even living in the same household. So you have your vaccine, but then if you're exposing yourself to other clients or other people, you are still bringing home some sort of risk. Mm-hmm. And a clinician also mentioned that do not expect me to have the same productivity if I have to go back to the office. They found that actually when they work from home, they're able to see more clients, more back-to-back, more concentrated instead of having like gossip in the hallway or having other drama when they're in the office. So they were like very honestly sharing that when they're working from home, they can actually see more clients and able to really get things done.
Versus so they like that more than hanging out with their colleagues. And
I mean, sometimes like something happened in the lobby, usually a clinician would be like, oh, what's going on? Do you need me? But then, okay, that will take time. Now you only focus on your caseload. And as long as you're assigning with all these clients, you do your work. And then we have still like regular meeting twice a week just to kind of keep everybody on the same page since we don't see each other. So we try to make an effort just to have like virtual meeting more often than usual. But it's really hard to think like what are the protocols, especially we have a children program that we have only one playroom. So imagining that if we have kids coming back in, if they share the toys or how we can kind of sanitize the toys every time when someone is here. And then we have like 3 therapists that are using the playroom. So it's a lot to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It is a lot to think about. That's mm-hmm. well stated. You know, it's interesting your point about having the meetings and stuff. I don't hear anybody talking about therapists really wanting to come back to the office. Mm-hmm. And it's funny. It's not funny, but we have 2 different outpatient locations. And at one of my outpatient locations, we actually just closed it. I had 2 therapists who were coming in and they actually both have tested positive. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting. So
you mean going to the office? They never went to the office or they had been going back?
They had been, they'd been going to the office straight along.
Okay.
From the beginning. And they just tested positive. And so they're actually out of the office, going to go back just doing virtual. I mean, they're both, thank God they're healthy and I'm sure they'll be fine. But what's interesting is we also used to really struggle to get people to team meetings because just in terms of the way we compensate, you know, people, you know, don't exactly get paid for meetings, but, and so I would have meetings like once a month, once every 2, you know, every twice a month. And people would say, you know, it's a lot of driving to get there and blah, blah, blah. And I wouldn't have, I'm telling you something, we did not even ask this question. We have a meeting every single week. And like, I've got like 15 therapists coming. So it's like really interesting. So I think the shift is fascinating. And this anxiety, I mean, it's funny listening to this because we almost forget sometimes that we're doing clinical work, right? We're sitting here and I know this is, again, as you said, Lisa, this is like us that are being affected by this. This is us. Like, do we have our vaccines? Or I am finding, even though we're getting more used to working virtually, and I just wanted to throw this out and see how you all were feeling about this. I feel like even though our teams are getting pretty well adapted, you know, managing, and they know how to do this stuff. And we've, you know, the network, we've done, you know, training and helping people. I feel like concerned about the energy level and the long-term impact that this is taking on our clinicians. I have heard from people that it's actually getting emotionally harder now, even though we're better at doing it. And I don't know whether you're feeling that with your teams as well.
I can speak to that. You know, our staff is really dedicated, but have definitely I sometimes wonder if part of the reason that I don't want to go back to the office because it's really easy to throw a load of laundry in the middle of the day when I'm working from home and stuff like that too. But I can definitely see that being multiple things in one location is definitely wearing on our staff on top of this kind of collective trauma that we're all going through. And we have staff who have a variety of home situations, whether it's caring for their parents along with working, or many of our staff have young children or school-aged children who are at any given moment being put in, out of school, teaching from home. And we've actually had multiple clinical staff make the decisions that they either had to cut their hours or resign in order to juggle all of the things that we need to juggle. And then at the same time, carrying the emotional burden and load for ourselves, our families, and our clients, it's definitely having an emotional impact. And it's also, you know, from a operational standpoint, it's also becoming difficult for the agency to meet the need of the community when we don't have the clinical staff having that availability. I also have staff who are unable to meet their productivity numbers that they were once totally slamming when we were in person, because they have to run and go do 8 different things at any given time. So, you know, it's nice to say back to back to back. And I certainly see clients who are much more consistent than they ever were. Right. But I don't think it's as, I think it's much more complex than, do I want to come back? Do I not want to come back? Some days I do. And some days I don't too.
I'm really glad to like begin this conversation with us, because I think this is sort of where the conversations are going to be now, is like, kind of, are we going to be coming back? What is coming back going to be look like? When is it safe to come back? But this element, like not forgetting that we as the workforce and our staff as the workforce, it's a huge piece of this puzzle. I mean, I agree with you, Lauren. I mean, I feel like, you know, there's a reason why it's hard to be a working mom, you know, and have your kids in your house with you. You know, it's hard. I think our communities can forget, because now we're all so good at knowing how to do telehealth. Well, we got that licked, but that doesn't mean that we're any less traumatized, because now the expectations on our staff and our teams and our agencies are just different. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that we're having a chance to catch up with ourselves emotionally.
I think our staff has, you know, each of them, the ones that I supervise directly, have, you know, expressed, you know, that, you know, a lot of weariness as this goes on and on and on, and everything that happens every day in the world that, you know, is very traumatic. And one of the things we did to try to deal with that a little bit, because they felt such isolation from each other, and they're used to seeing each other in the hall and talk about different things and stuff. So we just did some virtual hangouts. They weren't supervision sessions. They weren't, you know, they weren't anything really about the agency or about their clients or any of that. It was just so this group of people could get together and just hang out. And we were doing that kind of every couple, 2-3 weeks, just nice. Arranging something so people could just come and talk about whatever evolved in the get together.
I like that idea. I liked it.
Yeah.
Howard, did you want to say something?
Yeah. anybody familiar with any research having been done over the last couple of months on the impact or effectiveness of what we're doing with clients?
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with any.
Yeah, we, you know, in terms of the telehealth stuff, the impact, and it's been studied for years in terms of depression and anxiety,
the impact on clients, it is as effective, and for PTSD, it's as effective as in-office work. There's less research that's been done on psychosis, but for our depressions and anxieties, PTSDs, and even eating disorders, the data that had been looked at historically is where there's not been research yet is in the implications on the clients who have transitioned from in-office to now being seen virtually, you know, so, but we don't have to be afraid that it's not an effective way in terms of positive impacts. That's, you know, when I looked at stuff for the network stuff I was doing, that was sort of the research I saw. I don't know if anybody's seen
it. I kept on saying that all the PhD students now are going to have, you know, a heyday with
Oh my God. Anybody, we used to have to look for dissertation topics. Right. Like we're a walking dissertation topic.
I think our conversation today also highlights an area that heretofore was not looked at, which is right. If we are all in that same circumstance with a sense of lack of control and initiative on our end, how effective are we in assisting others who are dealing with that? That part is new.
Correct. Peggy, it's crying out for a research study. Right. I mean, you can almost see the control group and you can see sort of like, I don't know if you can find a part of the world though that's got therapists and who haven't lived through a pandemic. I mean, blew the opportunity for the good research study, right? It's like,
we're all in it right there.
Well, who's going to be in the control group?
I know, that's the problem.
Also,
you know who the control group is? The control group is my sweet 89-year-old mom with dementia who is knows who I am. She is happy as a lark. It is not, you know, spatially oriented. So she has no idea that she's living through the trauma of a pandemic. That may be our control group.
And Leslie, I'm going to say something else that I do think that there are a whole segment of our populations that are not, let's say, IT literate enough to make use of remote counseling. And that's sort of an unknown and a stress, certainly for some of my staff who have brought forward, you know, the person who used to be very religious, let's call it that, about coming in for sessions. And all of a sudden, you know, since the pandemic has really fallen off that that pattern, you know, and reaching out to them and trying to get them to engage in some way or another. And it's been, it is also, I feel, a very large stress to my staff about who they're missing and who's out there that is, you know, sort of dealing with their own mental health alone.
You guys, I know we have to get off in 1 minute because we promised people bio breaks. You know, people want time. So I never knew that term bio break, Lisa, until last week. I didn't even know that was a thing. So
It's a thing.
You guys, it's so good to see everybody. I know we've got to, do you want to continue this kind of, do you like having sort of this more open-ish forum for this group? I mean, we can certainly hardcore topics and things like that, but you know, it's such an evolving process here. So I would welcome if there's a particular issue topic, I want this affinity group to, maybe we just put that out there, Lisa, because I really want to make sure this continues to work for people, but I also want to be able to have content stuff if people want to talk topics. So I don't know, maybe we need a second group, not sure, anyhow.
So our next meeting is on the 18th of March. So write that down at 1 o'clock and hopefully.
Yeah, I've got a thought about that, Lisa. I'll catch you offline. We may put a middle support in the middle.
Okay, we may do something in the middle
too. Just a thought.
We're open to anything.
It was good to
see everyone. Thank you all for coming.
Stay well, smiley faces. New year.
Bye.
Bye.